Are you ready? It's time for On the Double with the Double S Express. Great sports talk and big time guests with Sean Wally and Sean Boyd on the Double with the Double S Express.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally with Sean Boyd. And Sean, goodness, hopefully our guests can help us make some kind of understanding as to what is going on in the NFL.
Well, the NFL is going well. It's just my team and your team we're trying to figure out, man. And maybe they didn't listen to the beginning of the show, Sean Wally, because, man, both teams turned down. And it looks like they're going to be waiting a whole week before they can turn it back up.
Well, you know, things definitely did not go right on the West Coast for the Raiders or the Seahawks. But, hey, they're not the only team scratching their heads. The Green Bay Packers have lost not one, not two, but three in a row, including a home game yesterday, which is just unheard of. The Cheeseheads are unhappy. Aaron Rodgers is not sure what is going on there either. Baltimore has been horrible all year. People picked them to win the Super Bowl or at least get there for the AFC side. Man, but, you know, there are still teams doing well. The rabbit's foot still with the New England Patriots.
Yeah, you know, the Patriots did an awesome job yesterday. And, of course, they had a little bit of help. You know, there was a late drive with Eli Manning connecting with the great one in Beckham. And, you know, they called it an incomplete pass. They called it a knockdown, took away the touchdown. And that one would have won the game for the Giants and upsetting the New England Patriots. But, yeah, like you're saying, the rabbit's foot continues for some. And New England lives to see another day, another week as an undefeated franchise.
And I'm not going to give it away right this second. You have to listen a little bit later in the show during our first big-time guest, who will be former NFL defensive back Nick Ferguson. And goodness, man, yeah, you talk about that catch. There were others, catches, non-catches. What is it? It's hard to tell which way is up right now with some of the officiating going around the NFL.
Well, you know, the officiating is the officiating. And, of course, you know, if it doesn't go your way, you're going to talk about it at the local watering hole or at the water cooler at work. And, you know, it is what it is. I know, you know, in the game in Oakland yesterday, it wasn't officiating. So there are some things that need to be dealt with and dealt with in a hurry. I mean, it's a, you know, it's that time of the year. We're halfway through the season. It's time to vie for positions and, you know, dare I say, it's time to, you know, step up and show your manhood and move forward. And, man, I don't know what's going on. You know, we have a lot of teams at 500 that are floundering. And then we have some teams that, as you were mentioning, like the New England Patriots, are just out there taking care of business. Hats off to the Carolina Panthers, by the way, for maintaining their undefeated streak as well. And so right now there are three teams that are undefeated, one being the Cincinnati Bengals, who are in play as we speak. And so, Sean, this is unusual to have this many teams undefeated at this point in the season.
Yeah, it's great for those teams. They're doing very well. The ball has definitely bounced their way, and we'll see. Houston hanging in there. Houston having a rough season, but they're trying to draw a line in the sand and start anew with the second half of the NFL season and see if J.J. Watt and company can come to play. And the scary thing is, if they can win tonight, they'll be in first place in their division, that being the Houston Texans.
Isn't that amazing? So where do you project the winner of this division being at the end of the season? What's their record?
You know, Sean, I mean, right now every team in that division is well under 500. So you're looking at a Seattle Seahawks 7-9 division champion at best right now.
Oh, gosh. You know, is that the beauty of the NFL? I mean, for the team that – I guess the team that winds up winning that division, it is. And so, you know, 7-9. You know, I remember when Seattle did it. And, of course, it was only up there in the Pacific Northwest that everybody thought that was an awesome idea. The rest of the NFL thought it was absurd and that something should be done about it. But, you know, as the commissioner, you know, said that – you know, this is something that this is a part of the league. And no matter what your record, if you win the division, you deserve that right to have a home game. And so, boy, this will be one of those divisions here that if they're under 500, can you believe it that they'll get to host a home game?
The AFC South leaders right now, the Indianapolis Colts at 4-5. Houston playing tonight on Monday Night Football at halftime, losing 6-3. That's got to be a victory right there for the Texans because they're holding Andy Dalton and company in that high-octane offense to only 2 field goals.
Yeah, just to, you know, of course, Houston has a strong defense. You know, of course, with one of the best players in the NFL, especially defensively, J.J. Watt, he will always keep you in the game. Now, of course, they have Brian Hoyer, who is the quarterback now for the Houston Texans, and he's doing an okay job. You know, he's not really scoring points, but, as far as time of possession is concerned, you know, both teams are about even, and so that's all they could ask for right now. And, you know, let's see what the Houston Texans can do.
Now, Sean, before big-time guest number one comes on tonight, you were there at O.co. The Minnesota Vikings came to town, and, you know, here I was thinking the Raiders are back home. They're going to right the ship. They're going to secure that home field and play well in front of the Black Hole faithful. Didn't exactly turn out that way. What happened? And it appears the Minnesota Vikings are legit.
Well, that's the thing. You know, I mean, when Minnesota came into Oakland, they were considered, in some cases, an underdog because of the upstart Oakland Raiders coming in at 4-4. Now, can you believe a team that comes in at 6-2 as an underdog? That's a lack of respect. And I believe that the Oakland Raiders, you know, when they came out to play, you know, had good intentions. But, Sean, I'm just going to tell you this flat out. The Minnesota Vikings are just a better team. They're a better team. You're talking about a defense that, you know, can they make great open field tackles. They're not afraid to stick their nose in on the run. They're, you know, the defensive coordinator dials up blitzes left and right. And you know, they do have shades of a Seattle Seahawks team that is in their prime. I mean, these guys are really a good football team.
7-2, the Vikings now, and get this, first place in their NFC division as the Packers have lost 3 in a row and are now 6-3.
Yeah, you know, and here's another thing in this Monsters of the Midway division. You're talking about a 7-2 Minnesota Vikings team, 6-3 Green Bay. Man, what happened to, you know, back in week 2, week 3 when we were laughing at the Chicago Bears? The Chicago Bears, 2.5 games out, actually 3 games out of first place, which is still rather in striking distance. They can still, you know, vie for a wild card spot themselves. 4-5, you know, they're not doing bad. And so this is a pretty keyed up division in the NFC North. But, you know, getting back to the game yesterday, you know, when you're a team that's still trying to find themselves defensively, and they're still a young ball club, meaning the Oakland Raiders, you're going to find some big, big gaps in what they do. Now, I've got a question for you, Sean. You know, if you had the choice, you know, quarterback-wise, to draft a quarterback, would you draft Teddy Bridgewater or Derek Carr?
Going off of what I knew of them, I would have taken Carr.
And what would be your reasoning for drafting Derek Carr?
Well, probably because what I saw of him playing at Fresno State, he's a West Coast guy. I got to see more of those games. I didn't have a lot of chance to watch Bridgewater. It's not like I had tape on both guys, saw their highs and lows. So just going off of what I knew, I would have gone with Carr. But like I said, I didn't study both. I wasn't like a scout or a coach or a GM who watches hours and hours of tape on everybody under the sun.
Now, knowing what you know now, after watching parts of the game yesterday, I'm sure you watched a majority of the game yesterday and watching Teddy Bridgewater, seeing what you saw, seeing their record at 7-2, given the chance to draft those quarterbacks still, which quarterback would you draft?
Man, that's a very good question. We need to put that out on Twitter and see what responses we get, because really, I mean, they are similar in years, both in their second year. Mm-hmm. Bridgewater obviously having more success, but the team around him as a whole appears to have more talent based off of their record and their head-to-head play yesterday.
Okay. Now, it's interesting that you say that, because this is the moniker that the Seattle Seahawks have had for quite some time. And so now when you talk to the 12s and you talk to the Pacific Northwest, and you explain the greatness of Russell Wilson, there's a big, big backing for Russell Wilson, and justifiably so. But when you look at Teddy Bridgewater in contrast to Derek Carr, it's the odds-on favorite that if you were to pick a franchise quarterback, that you would pick a Derek Carr for all the intangible reasons. Now, it's a tough question because Bridgewater's record is 7-2, but as you had stated, there is a great nucleus of players around him. Now, with that being said, with Seattle, this is what people have been trying to say about Russell Wilson. And the Seattle Seahawks fans and the 12s have said all along, oh, no, 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 he's up there with Aaron Rodgers. Oh, no, 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 he's got to be one of the best quarterbacks around. And I think you've answered the question, Sean Wally, because, you know, when we're watching Russell right now and we're watching the lack of talent that he has around as far as an offensive line, then all of the magic things that he was able to do prior, he's not able to do now. And so, but if you have that, the intangible quarterback, I believe, you know, one that can actually win the games for you, I think it becomes a little different. But I could be wrong. And, you know, but when I watch Teddy Bridgewater, I'm watching Russell Wilson, and you can't fault him because he's in a great situation. He's at 7-2, and dare I say, Minnesota, if they continue to do what they're doing, they could run the table and wind up being in the Super Bowl. But again, when we're talking about franchise quarterbacks, and you know, and I think you've answered it, that, you know, that's what people are looking at.
Well, there's always been the prototypical quarterback, the 6'2", 200-pound gunslinger. And, you know, these quarterbacks in the last few years, the Kaepernicks, the Wilsons, heck, you can go back many years. Doug Flutie was of that mold, they were smaller in stature, and they use their legs a lot more than most. Drew Brees, smaller in stature, doesn't run nearly as much, but he's mobile enough. But we'll get out to the HolySmokeNuts.com phone lines. Welcome in big-time guest number one tonight, former defensive back for a plethora of NFL teams, including the Denver Broncos, Nick Ferguson. Thanks for your time tonight.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, Nick. It's always a pleasure having you on, man. And, of course, when we have you on, we're going to get right into talking NFL football. And let's talk about, man, let's talk about the Denver Broncos. Let's talk about, you know, one of the things that, you know, of course, Denver just a few weeks ago was considered, you know, one of the odds-on favorites of going to the Super Bowl or actually vying for the Super Bowl. And now we're finding out that Peyton Manning is going to be out, might be out for a little bit, might be out for the rest of the season. It plantar fasciitis?
Yeah, it is plantar fasciitis. And if you guys are not familiar with it, this is a real beast of an injury, because basically what it is, if you were to look at the heel of your foot, it's a tendon that connects the heel of your foot to your toes. So that's talking about a lot of planting, a lot of flexion. And when you're a quarterback, you know, I heard you guys talking about gunslinger mentality. to me, that's how quarterbacks measure in the NFL and coming out of college about, you know, their arm strength. But it's about what you're able to do with those lower extremities. And we've watched Peyton Manning struggle in these early parts of the season, and we never really knew. Everyone was trying to figure out, well, what's the cause of it? Is it because, you know, he's older now and he can't do the same thing? But now with this foot problem coming out, this plantar fasciitis, it gives me a little more insight about what's going on with Peyton Manning, because if you look at some of the games where he did not perform well, most recently that Kansas City game, he can't really plant off of that foot and drive the ball downfield, and that's affecting whether he has a little touch on his balls. And yesterday in the game, we saw balls underthrown. He did not make great decisions. He said that in his post-game interview. So it's good to know that it's not just the fact that it's an elder or olding, aging, Peyton Manning, but now those health issues are affecting his fundamentals.
Now, you know, plantar fasciitis is a very serious injury if it's not treated properly. Do you know why the Denver Broncos, or actually Peyton Manning's camp, kept something like this a secret from the franchise instead of actually getting the treatment and you know, getting better midway or late through the season?
Well, here's what the guys have to realize. You know, at this point in the season, every player is banged up. He's dealing with some kind of injury. And once you get an injury or something that takes place with the OTAs and minicamp, you really can't get over that and be healthy until after the season is over. And I, too, myself, just like a Peyton Manning, had sustained some kind of injury, but it wasn't enough to go into the training room and get treatment for. But it appears as though this thing has started to progressively get worse up until this point where now he had to go in and see the trainers and say, hey, listen, this thing, I thought I had it under control. I have a high tolerance for pain. I thought I could fight through it, but this foot is really giving me some issues. And I think that's the thing that happened. He finally went in and told the trainers, I need you guys to really take a look at it.
Nick, the Denver Broncos now 7-2 on the year in the AFC West. They've got a nice three-game cushion, which will help with backup quarterback Brock Osweiler now taking snaps under center. But the Kansas City Chiefs charging hard in that rearview mirror for the Broncos.
Yeah, they definitely charging hard. And that's one thing about it. When you are or have been the top seed of the division for so long, everyone is gunning for you. You know, and now you are the hunted. And now, you know, the Broncos are dealing with, you know, some internal issues. And what I mean by internal issues, here's a defense that was great at causing turnovers. In the past two games, they haven't really been the same. They haven't been able to do that. The penalties is something that is really hurting them down the stretch. And we saw Akeem Tlaib against the Colts, and then we saw T.J. Ward, against Kansas City late when he threw the forearm to Jeremy Maclin. So to me, it's about those guys gelling cohesively in that locker room and knowing as though you're going to be without Peyton Manning. Now you have to rally around Brock Osweiler, and now you need all your guns and blazing, because now you're asking a guy to come in who's been sitting on the bench for four seasons to now come in and start a game and play 60 minutes, and he has to play well. So you get Jay Cutler and the Chicago Bears, who are playing well at this particular point. Then you have New England coming up after that. But in the AFC West, everyone is gunning. Kansas City now still feels as though they have the chance. And Oakland Raiders and Derek Carr feels as though they have a chance as well.
Nick, you've played football a really long time, and now you're wiser and more mature. The NFL season, 16 games long. You see how things are roller coaster, especially this season. It happens every season. How do you tell fans and listeners and viewers out there that not to overreact, because it seems like that's what happens after every loss and even wins? They think, oh, our team's going to the Super Bowl. If you win a game and then you lose the next week, oh, man, we're the worst team in the world. So how do you right the ship and then just tell everybody it's going to be okay? The season is way too long.
Well, see, that's the difference between, you know, those who really follow the game and the fan expectations. Because when you're a fan, you're so vested in your team. And your Monday morning, you know, your mood of your Monday morning is that equivalent to how well your team performed that Sunday. And you can't be too high, you can't be too low, because that's the idea at the very beginning. When you look at the Green Bay Packers, at the very beginning of the season, everyone was saying, oh, well, you might as well book the ticket to Santa Clara with the Patriots and the Green Bay Packers. But hold on now. The Patriots are on a 3-game slide. So now, are they panicking and Packer land? Nope. They figure as though they have some concern, but they need to find a way to right the ship, get the running game going. But that's what happened. Fans tend to panic all the time. And just because your team may lose one or two games, you got to go back to the history of the franchise and look at the kind of nucleus of players that you have in the fold. Can they rally and get back on track? Some teams can't do that. If we were talking about maybe the Tampa Bay Buccaneers right now or the Cleveland Browns, yes, I would be concerned if I were a Denver Broncos fan or Packers fan. But we're talking about two-story franchises with great players at the quarterback position. So to me, yeah, be a little worried, but it's not panic mode just yet, because both teams are sitting well in their division to still either be a wild card team or still have a potential to get that number two seed in the division. So it's not time to panic just yet.
Nick Ferguson joining us here on The Double. And, you know, Nick, what Sean was talking about as far as the fans are concerned could spill over in today's player. And what I mean by that, in the NFC East this past week, there was an altercation after a practice after the game with Dallas Cowboys' Dez Bryant receiving a tweet from a journalist who tweeted about him in the locker room. I mean, so as a player, so tell me, as a player, players are supposed to have thick skin. And I'm just trying to figure out how this happens in today's age, you know, as far as football players concerned.
Well, you got to understand, in the era before me, there was a certain type of mentality. And I was brought up in that same type of mentality, toughness, the mental and physical toughness, both on the field and off the field. What we have to look at, and if you're a coach in the league, you have to look at it and approach it the same way. Today's players are entirely different. They're too emotionally driven. And Dez Bryant, we all know that he's a very volatile player. Anything can set him off. Now, with the locker room altercation, he is a professional. He should have handled that in the right way. Yes, the media have a job that they have to do. And sometimes they don't always do it the correct way, fellas. They have a story that they've already written. They just need someone to attach their name to it. So they go in the locker room, and they poke the bear. And if you are in a situation that Dez Bryant and the Dallas Cowboys find themselves in, it's not easy to poke the bear, or let me rephrase that. It is very easy to poke the bear and get a certain type of response that warrants national attention. So to me, Dez Bryant has to do a better job of maintaining his composure in situations like that, because they know which guys that they can go to and get a particular soundbite from. But today's athlete, man, it's too sensitive, fellas. It's entirely too sensitive.
Yeah. Now, do you think he was right in that, you know, as far as what he was saying? Because, you know, when I was listening to him, I did understand where Dez was coming from. But, you know, as you're saying, that's probably not the place or the arena to do that in.
No, it is not. I agree with a certain point of what Dez was doing. I, too, have been a part of something where a reporter said something that I said, and he reported it and put it out there as a comment and a quote, but he didn't pull the full extension of what I said, so it could have been misinterpreted by our coaches, and I was playing for the Jets at that time. So I would agree, if you're a journalist, you have a job. If you get a soundbite or a quote from someone, please quote it in its entirety. Don't just take certain things out and just skew the message of what that particular player said, but still, we're dealing with a certain level of professionalism, and if Dez has a problem with it, hey, you go to that reporter and say, hey, listen, what you reported is not exactly what I said. I then go to the person who's in charge of the media at the Dallas Cowboys facility, talk to them about that particular reporter and make sure we remove that guy from any pre- and post-game interview.
Nick, as a former defensive back in the NFL, one question for you. What is a catch in the league right now? Do you have any idea?
I can't wait till you explain this.
Okay. I'm gonna take you back for a second. Now let's go back to last year playoffs in Lambeau Field. Dez Bryant, right? Where everyone was saying, okay, was that a catch or not? Okay, so there's a difference between a catch and a reception. A catch, you put two hands on the ball and you come down with it. Now, a reception, on the other hand, you have to come catch the ball, not bobble the ball, get 2 feet down, and then try to make a football move. Now, here's the thing. What's a football move, right? Is that turning with the ball, taking one step, or turning with the ball, taking two steps? Now, if you're asking that question, I have no idea.
I have no idea, fellas.
Yeah. Now, Nick, I know you were busy yesterday with the family, but there were two incidences that were looked like catches, looked like football moves. The New York Giants touchdown to Odell Beckham, or so we thought. They reversed that, said it was not a catch. And then in the late game in Seattle, Darren Fells, catch, 2 feet, turns up field, has it poked away, and they call that incomplete. Did you see either of those?
Okay, Darren Fells, that catch in the Seattle-Arizona game, that should have been a reception. Now, going back to Odell Beckham Jr.'s, you know, what we thought was a reception against Malcolm Butler, I would say not. Because as Odell Beckham was bringing in the catch, right, he had to put 2 feet on the ground and actually show that he had possession of the ball, which Malcolm Butler, being a smart DB that he is, decided, I'm going to slap his hand. So leave the ref to make a judgment call whether it was a catch or a reception. So for me, in that particular case, Odell Beckham Jr., that was an incomplete pass. He did not pull it in. He was disrupted by Malcolm Butler, but the catch in the Arizona-Seattle game, that was a reception, gentlemen.
Nick Ferguson,
do you feel more confused now than you felt before?
Yes, I do, Nick. But I leave it to Sean Wally to bring up this question pertaining the Seattle Seahawks. How did I know that was going to happen? You know what, Sean? I was wondering why you were talking about the officiating at the beginning of the show, and now I know why. Hey, good job, Nick, on explaining that should have been a catch. Man.
Well, I tell you, fellas, it's always tough, but, you know, thank you guys for having me on.
Now, hey, Nick, I've got another question for you. Of course, there is the carousel that has been going on as far as the coordinator's position is concerned. Of course, Pep Hamilton being released from the Indianapolis Colts a couple of weeks ago. Now there's just word that defensive coordinator for the Saints, Rob Ryan, has been released of his duties from the New Orleans Saints. Do you think these guys are scapegoats here as far as, you know, what's going on with the team, or are these the right calls?
You know, I think they're scapegoats because at this point, some teams don't want to fire the head coach. So the head coach is put in a position, is either him or offensive coordinator, and Pep Hamilton's case. And as far as Rob Ryan, he being a defensive coordinator. But to me, and I'll start with the Saints first, you can't blame all of those woes of that defense on Rob Ryan. Because to me, I'm always of the frame of mind, you cannot play chess with checker pieces. And if you look at that same defensive unit, they're giving up some big plays. Rob Ryan, his job is to put those players in a position to make plays. It's not his fault that they can't play the coverage that he's designed. It's not his fault that they can't rush the passer and maintain lane integrity the way that he coached them up to do. It's not his fault. But because the New Orleans Saints are not playing the caliber of football that we've come to know them to play, and Drew Brees and that offensive struggle, someone's got to jump on the grenade, fellas, and right now it's Rob Ryan.
Nick Ferguson, you are the host of Nick Ferguson's Secondary Perspective on VoiceAmerica.com. That airs Thursday, 10 a.m. live Pacific Standard Time and also on demand. And, man, you've had some amazing guests using your connections very well. Deion Branch, Tashard Choice, Maurice Claret, Jay Fiedler, Antonio Freeman. The list goes on and on. You're having a fun time with that show.
Yeah, you know, I am having a fun time. If you did not see it, I'll make sure I get it out to you guys. There was a campaign with the Denver Broncos and UC Health trying to generate more awareness for men's health, calling this Movember. That's why you see a lot of guys in the NFL wearing these mustaches. But I put a video up with one of my characters, Cousin Randall, so I'll make sure I get that out to you guys so you guys can see that. But, yes, I'm having fun. With the show, and I'm thinking about shooting a special holiday Thanksgiving episode for next week. So I make sure I keep you guys in tune with that.
That'll be awesome. Doing great things. Nick Ferguson, thank you so much for your time. Your show, Secondary Perspective on VoiceAmerica.com, Thursdays at 10 a.m. We appreciate your insight, and we'll talk to you later on in the NFL season.
Thank you for having me on the Double Express, fellas. Choo-choo, baby. Choo-choo.
I love it. I love it. I knew it was coming out. Thanks again, Nick.
All right. No problem, fellas.
There goes Nick Ferguson. All kinds of insight. A great football mind. And, heck, now he's doing great things in broadcasting as well.
Well, you know, Sean, you know, I think we're missing something on our – you know, our opening on the double, you know, Nick is always giving the choo-choo, man. We might have to have some type of some train noise coming in as on the double gets going, man. It's always a pleasure having Nick Ferguson here. And we're going to take a quick break. And when we return, we're going to have guest number two on, and that is Jessica Benson of KNDU. So keep it locked in. You're listening to the best sports talk on the double with the Double S Express.
What's my image?
At Images Barbershop and Styles, you get the best cut, the best design, and the best styles in the Sacramento area. Plus the affordable price, along with the fun, family-friendly atmosphere, you'll walk away with a look of satisfaction and the feeling of a new you. Do you have your image?
We have ours!
Images Barbershop and Styles, located at 10040 Bruceville Road, Elk Grove, California, Suite 140. For appointments, call 916-271-0218. That's Images Barbershop and Styles.
I'm Chris Walls, and I'm a truck driver from Missouri. For 13 hours a night, I sit in my truck and I drive. Out of boredom, I'll stop and eat. If I'm not doing fast food, I guarantee there's a bag of chips open on my dashboard. Along with that, I'm good for about 4 liters of soda a night. That was all until Andro 400. I started out 4 months ago weighing 341 pounds. And since taking Andro 400, I have dropped 45 pounds. I'm sleeping better. There's no cravings. There's no excessive thirst. My knee pain went away. I've had some lower back issues, and I've noticed that that went away. And I can only contribute that to Andro 400. One thing that Andro 400 said on the radio ad says it attacks belly fat. Well, let me tell you, it did. I've lost 6 inches. This product really does work.
So guys, if you'd like to experience similar results, then get Andro 400, the safe, natural, and inexpensive way to boost your testosterone. Go to Andro400.com. Andro400.com.
Who likes the inconvenience of car repairs? Not only do car repairs take time and money from you, but can you even trust your repair shop? Nate, Dave, and the team at Platinum Automotive Services in Tri-Cities, Washington are honest and trustworthy, and they take great care of your vehicle. From the basic oil change to full engine rebuilds, they do it all. Like the Platinum Automotive Services Facebook page for a shot at a free oil change. Platinum Automotive Services, platinum service without the platinum price.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally and Sean Boyd.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally here with Sean Boyd, and let's go back out to the holysmokednuts.com phone lines and welcome in big time guest number two tonight, the sports director at KNDU in Kennewick, Washington, Jessica Benson. Thanks for your time tonight.
Hey, thanks guys for having me. I appreciate it.
Hey, Jessica, it's a busy time of the year, of course. High school football is in full swing with the playoffs starting. We thought that maybe SWX would get some things, some games there, but it sounds like we're making the turn into high school basketball. I'm sure that that's a, you know, an added breather for you being the sports director at KNDU.
Well, you would think so. You wish that there was a little bit of extra time between the high school football and high school basketball seasons, but we do still have plenty of teams alive. We're really hoping to, you know, broadcast the Ellensburg-Prosser game this Saturday. Some things didn't exactly work out there, but I'd say that's one of the top games actually in the state at any level this week, kind of a rematch there. And we also have Richland, and we're really hoping, fingers crossed, that if the things go as planned, if Richland wins, if Gonzaga Prep wins, SWX would actually broadcast that semifinal game next week. So we're crossing our fingers for that, but I'm working on the basketball schedule just about now, and it seems like we have no time between the two.
Yes, it sounds like you definitely have your hands full. Now, talking about the Ellensburg-Prosser game, what are some of the highlights that we could look forward to in that game?
Well, you know, that last time they matched up in October, Ellensburg won that game in overtime. I think I said back then that I was almost more excited for that game than I was for some of my own high school football games back in the day. But two just storied programs, year after year, it seems like they're constantly meeting at some time in the state playoffs. And last year, Ellensburg won in the quarterfinals, so this really is a rematch of last year's state tournament as well. And I've been so impressed, though, with Prosser's quarterback Tanner Bolt this year, and he just has so many targets to choose from that I think the Mustangs might be able to, you know, make up for that last loss they had, but it really could go either way.
Jessica, you've done a lot in your short sports broadcasting career. Coming from Los Angeles, you went to USC, a great school, obviously a big city. What was it like transitioning to a small market like the Tri-Cities?
It was interesting. Definitely a lot less traffic was the big highlight there for a while. I don't spend nearly as much time sitting in rush hour. My dad was actually born in Yakima, Washington. So it was kind of cool for me to come back to this area that he grew up in. He then moved to Spokane, so he knows all the high schools that I'm covering and is constantly asking me questions and involved, and I have a lot of rooted family here in the Pacific Northwest. But it's definitely an adjustment, to say the least. But I was really impressed with how passionate this area is with their high school sports and with teams like the Tri-City Americans. And, you know, we don't have a huge college team right here in this area, so people kind of rally around those other teams, and it's really nice to see the passion that they have for those groups.
Just off the top of your head, do you have any favorite stories that you've been able to come across, these high school athletes, maybe the coaches, that really stand out and just remarkable in what they've been able to do and also maybe overcome?
Well, actually, one of the most interesting stories that I've done since I moved here, it wasn't a high school girl, it was actually a sixth grade female football player. Her name was Audalia Williams. She lives down in Yakima, and she had the most touchdowns of any kid in her division, and she was a girl. And I just thought it was such a cool thing for, you know, those kids to accept her, and all the boys on the team knew not to mess with her because she could beat just about any one of them. And I showed up to practice ready to do this story, and the first thing she did was broke off for about a 97-yard run, and I knew she was pretty cool. So I think she's going to go the track and field route, it sounded like, when she goes into high school or middle school and all that. But definitely a different experience than some of the things I'd seen before. I hadn't ever really talked with a girl football player, and here she was just a total baller.
Man, 75-yard touchdown. I mean, yeah, that sounds like she is primed and ready to play football.
Yeah, I was going to say, sign her up. I think she's in the Davis district, so sign her up for whatever program. They could definitely use girls as tough as her on that team. But we just come across so many cool kids in this area, and I just enjoy all of them. Right now, my other big one is the Liberty Christian quarterback. It's eight-man football, which I personally had never experienced eight-man football, and this kid just absolutely slaughtered every 1B record in the state of Washington this year, and he also just broke the national rushing record for eight-man football, so he's a really special kid too.
Jessica Benson of KNDU, sports director in the Tri-Cities, joining us here on The Double. Now, Jessica, which would you rather prefer, to be in the big city? Of course, you graduating from USC, summa cum laude. Congratulations on that, by the way.
Thank you.
So would you rather be in the big market, or do you like the smaller markets such as the Tri-Cities area?
You know, I really like learning and growing in this area. My mom lives in Gig Harbor, Washington, so it's nice to be, you know, in kind of proximity to her four-hour drive, but just counting. I grew up, though, in the suburbs of Denver, and that's someplace that's always had a very special place in my heart. So where I don't necessarily, you know, Los Angeles was a great place to go to school, hustle and bustle, constantly exciting. But I really like places like a Denver. That's kind of the middle ground, even though obviously compared it's a big city. But there's some of those suburbs around there where you get some more vibes.
Now, yes, of course, you definitely get those similar vibes in some of the Americana cities. And so Denver. So you grew up in Denver, of course. But dad being from Yakima, correct?
Correct, and he now lives in New Orleans, so I'm really all over the place.
Wow. Well, I couldn't leave out talking about the Palm Springs of Washington, and so I'm sure I'm sure it's always fun to get back there to Yakima.
Yeah, it's definitely been entertaining. Actually, my significant other, I'll just throw him out there, he was at KNDO in Yakima. We actually met back at the Olympics in London. We were both interns for NBC, and so we both ended up coming out here for our first job so that we could kind of be in the area. But the fact that he started in Yakima, and most people in this country, you say Yakima and no one really knows where it is, but he went off to the Palm Springs of Washington and got his start there. So played a couple rounds of golf at the same golf course my dad learned how to play golf on, so I can't really ask for anything more than that. That's been really special for me.
Now, Jessica, obviously, SWX and KNDU, NBC right now would be your top notch right now. But with what you've done in your past at school and also your internships and other jobs, what are you most proud of?
I would actually say that the Olympics internship was something that just meant so much to me. We went off to London. It was my first experience in a foreign country. And even though it's England and they speak the language, so it's not that big of a stretch. But it was really 5 weeks of no sleep, constant work, and I was kind of wavering between doing sports and news. At USC, you have to commit to news. There's not really a specialized sports journalism. You can do it as a minor, but not as your major. And so I'd kind of been wavering back and forth, and spending that time at the Olympics and seeing the opening ceremonies up close and personal, and, you know, working around guys like Al Michaels and Bob Costas and these legends, and suddenly I was like, this is what I have to do. And it really kind of changed everything. I never did another news internship, and I went from there.
Now, Jessica, we have to touch on what you did around Halloween, or should I say, was it on Halloween or the day before? You and Greg Talbot, the sports crew at NBC right now and SWX in Tri-Cities, did an awesome job. You guys dressed up as coaches, and you played the part dressed up as Coach Eric Taylor from Friday Night Lights, the Dillon Panthers. That must have been a fun adventure for you.
Well, I mean, our show is Friday Night Lights, so it only seems appropriate to give Coach Taylor a shout-out. I had thought about going as Lane Kiffin and the many stages of Lane Kiffin over the last few years, but, you know, Coach Taylor won out in that one.
Now, Jessica, now I have to mention one thing here, because in your vast bio, there's one thing that you really enjoy doing, and I have to ask you this. Of course, you were the ball girl in 2002-2003 for the NCAA Final Fours, and so, you know, now you mentioned that's something that you would love to do again. I mean, is that something that you're just saying, or is basketball your life?
Hey, if they made a paying position out of it, I would do it in a heartbeat. I tried to be a ball girl for a football game once. That was a little scarier, a little more high intense. But with basketball, you just have the best view in the house, and it's more about the, you know, sweeping up the court between timeouts and during halftime. So, yeah, that was just, I mean, the best thing ever. I live for March Madness. I'm the most obnoxious person in the world. I have one game on one computer, a game on my phone, two games on my TVs, and I live for that time of year.
Well, we'll be sure to make sure that there is some type of a position available to pay the ball girl or the ball boy
or the ball person
coming up. Because, yeah, you know, I'm like you. I love March Madness, love college basketball. So, yeah, that's definitely a fun time of the year.
Yes, and I count down to it all year. And on the first day of it, I was lucky. This past year, my off day of the week from work was on Thursday. And so, obviously, it tipped off on Thursday. And I ordered a pizza by myself and just sat and watched basketball all day long.
You know, Sean, maybe now's a good time to let Jessica know that we've worked a handful of NCAA tournaments for CBS Sports, and maybe we could work her into the mix.
Hey, yeah, just let us know. Now, we're still working on this whole ball person, ball girl, ball boy thing. So, yeah, but I think there's a way we can get you in.
I appreciate it.
Jessica, you do a lot for KNDU, SWX, NBC right now. From the anchor desk to live reporting to analyst duties for live games, and we've worked together this fall. What is your preference, and where do you see yourself in the future?
Oh, man, that is a good question, Sean. I'm kind of all over the place. I love everything. I really do love anchoring and hosting. I have always had a passion for writing, and so to be able to write my own stuff is something that definitely stands out to me. But there's also that thing about being at a live event and being in the middle of a game, and that goes anywhere from an exciting high school game all the way up to college, the pros. You get that same kind of energy and electricity at being there. So my thing is I think what I want to do when I grow up, so they say, hasn't been decided yet. I have hands dipped all over the place, and we'll see which one ends up going the longest route.
Now, Jessica, I have to ask you this question also. Now, working with Sean Wally, which I know is a big, big task in itself. Now, he was working the cameras for SWX. How good of an employee is he? I mean, does he work the cameras well?
You know, it's a hard life to work with Sean, but someone has to do it. No, he actually has brought, and I say this with all sincerity, he knows what he's doing. He knows the game, and it is so nice to have employees like him who help better our SWX broadcast, because I just think that's so cool for those kids to have the opportunity to play. And people like Sean make sure that they are shown correctly and as nicely as possible.
Well, that's good to hear. That's good to hear.
Jessica, you got me speechless. Well, thank you for your hard work.
I'm just here to pump up your ego.
Oh my goodness, that's enough of that.
Well, no, we're not doing that.
Right.
Jessica Benson, SWX right now, NBC right now, KNDU in Kennewick, Washington. You're all over the place. The sports director, NBCRightNow.com. Follow her on Twitter, Jessica J. Benson. Thank you so much for your time and insight tonight. And we will see you in the next week or two for some sort of high school or WHL hockey or some kind of sport here in the Tri-Cities.
Thanks, guys. Hopefully I get a couple hours of sleep in between then.
Yeah. Well, hey, keep on being successful, and the best of luck to you in your career.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
There goes Jessica Benson in Tri-Cities, Washington, doing all kinds of things and apparently getting little sleep in Kennewick, Washington.
Everybody get up. Well, when we return, we're going to close out the show talking about a little bit more sports. So keep it locked in. You're listening to the best sports talk on the Double with the Double S Express.
Are you tired of the gym scene in Tri-Cities, Washington? Tired of seeing all those ridiculous gym selfies? If you are ready to work on a better you, Power Alley Performance is the place you can reach your goals. From one-on-one personal training to group fitness sessions, the trainers at Power Alley Performance will help motivate you every step of the way. Trainers DJ and Lamont have a wealth of knowledge and experience that they are ready to share with you. Call Power Alley today at 509-554-4785 and tell them the Double S Express sent you for a complimentary half-hour session. Visit PowerAlleyPerformance.com.
Guys, are you having trouble getting to sleep? Would you like to know the secret to getting a great night's sleep every night? Bruce Feeney discovered this secret, a new all-natural sleep aid for men. Listen to what he says about it.
Hey, you know, I tried a product recently called Love to Sleep. It was a great product. Helped me a lot. Took 3 or 4 days for it to start working in my system, and I fell asleep very quickly and got up rested. And if I got up during the middle of the night, I ended up coming back to bed and fell right back to sleep. I would recommend it to all my friends.
If you, too, would love to get a good night's sleep every night, and wake up feeling great in the morning, try Love to Sleep, the new sleep aid for men. Your satisfaction is 100% guaranteed. And because Love to Sleep is all natural, it's completely safe, with no side effects or risk of dependency. Go to lovetosleep.com. That's lovetosleep.com.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally and Sean Boy.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally with Sean Boyd. Mr. Boyd, how's the weather? Any tornadoes, any twisters in sight this Monday?
Well, you know, not in the Sacramento area, but that's funny that you mentioned it because in Solano County yesterday in a little town called Dunaire, California, there was a tornado that hit, swirled around, picked up a lot of stuff, caused, you know, some great damage. And so it's not done here. The weather's a little fickle here in Northern California, so it's cool. Nice afternoons, though, but, you know, we're getting the swirling winds and everything, so you can tell that the weather is a little bit hostile. The Sierras, Sean Wally, up there in Tahoe. Man, there's a lot of snow up there. The ski resorts are opening early. So there's a lot of excitement that maybe we will not dry up and wither away in the valley here. So, you know, that's exciting.
Snow showing up all over the West Coast. The Cascades doing the same in Washington and Oregon. So good news for not only skiers, snowboarders, and tubers, but hey, maybe there'll be some water left for next summer.
You know, I sure hope so, man. And you know, it's looking like a good fall into the winter so far. And so, you know, it's been raining every weekend, which is great about California. During the weekday, you know, it's sunny, and then the weekend it rains. Maybe it should be backwards the other way around, I guess, you know, because, you know, everybody's off during the weekends. But nonetheless, we're getting our share of precipitation, so that's a lot of fun.
Now, Sean, we touched on it in the last couple weeks. Ricardo Lockett, the Seattle Seahawks receiver and special teams elitist, had the neck surgery after the big hit and concussion in Dallas. You probably saw Sunday Night Football. He assisted in raising the 12th man flag with his neck brace on, saying afterwards it was euphoric, one of the best days of his life.
You know, that was so good to see that, you know, Seattle, the 12s, you know, had him raising the flag and getting the chance to, you know, to see him functioning, you know, because you can read the reports and everything, but, you know, it was exciting to see that he got a chance to raise the flag. He was amongst the fans. And so, you know, I got a chance to see some of my friends on Facebook taking pictures with him and in the proximity on the sidelines. And so, you know, that's a good sign. You know, we hope that he has a speedy recovery, and just know that, you know, when he does come back, he'll be 100% and doing those great things that he's been doing.
Well, he was asked by the press after the game what his thoughts are on next season, and he says, stone cold, he flat out says, I will be a Pro Bowler.
And that's, you know, that's great to hear. That is great to hear, and, you know, we just wish him nothing but the best. And now, hey, Sean, I've got some things to talk to you about, you know, pertaining the Seattle Mariners. There are some big things that have been going on here. Of course, today there have been some trades going on where the Seattle Mariners are making some great moves. But before we go there, and I'm surprised you haven't even mentioned this to me all week, but what about Ken Griffey Jr. getting his nomination for the Baseball Hall of Fame?
That's a no-brainer, a shoe-in. You could have put it in concrete years ago. First ballot Hall of Famer, no doubt. And they're saying there's only two definites this year, meaning the 2016 class in Cooperstown, New York, is where the Baseball Hall of Fame is. Good job, Sean. And him and Griffey and the Trevor Hoffman, the former closer extraordinaire, also probably a shoe-in as well. And whether or not anybody else gets in, it might be a very small class in 2016.
Well, you know, it couldn't happen to a better person than Ken Griffey Jr., and so hats off to him. And, you know, just the great successes that he's had here in Seattle, and of course, you know, finishing his career in Cincinnati. But, man, hats off to Ken Griffey Jr. Now, these trades, man, these trades mean that Seattle means business one step closer to possibly being in the postseason next year. Leonis Martin coming from the Texas Rangers. And, you know, that's a big deal. And, you know, there are a couple other trades that are going on there, Sean Wally.
That's right. Jerry DePoto is not messing around. He said he was going to acquire athleticism, especially in the outfield, and that is what they've done. They've re-signed Franklin Gutierrez, who tore the cover off the ball when he played in 2014. He only played in 59 games, yet he had, 15 home runs? So you multiply that by a full season. If he can stay healthy, he will be huge in helping this team get better. But, yeah, you're talking about the trades. They've acquired new young starters, relievers, and now this outfielder Martin from Texas. He had a down year in 2014, and Jerry DePoto says that's the time you jump on somebody. You take that chance. Somebody that's done better previously, they had a down tick for whatever reason, but guess what? You can get them at a cheaper price.
Yeah, and they are. They're getting a lot younger. And what DePoto has also done, he's picked up a starting pitcher in Nathan Carnes and a reliever in Joaquin Benoit, you know, and a pair of outfielders as well. And so, you know, this guy's definitely making some moves here. And let's see what the Mariners can do with a lot of young talent. And, of course, they'll probably be groomed in the offseason. And you'll be called up in no time, but some hot new moves coming from the Seattle Mariners.
Really? I mean, if you look at it from the Mariners that are leaving perspective, the only one that's might tug at somebody's heartstrings is Tom Wilhelmsen being sent in the deal with Texas. And, you know, he's been up and down in his Mariner career as well. great closer for a while, had a down year in 2013, seemed to finally recover some of his nastiness in 2014, but it wasn't for the entire year, and he's getting up there in age as well. So, heck, he was expendable because of the young guys they brought in to go along with guys like Charlie Furbush, who's been a lefty out of the pen for years for Seattle. So if nothing else, it's nice to see moves being made and somebody as the GM that thinks they have a vision and they know what they're doing and they're following that path.
So developing a young crew for the Seattle Mariners and Ken Griffey Jr. that we feel will be a first ballot Hall of Famer. I mean, you know, what's next? I mean, Edgar Martinez, maybe?
Well, how euphoric and amazing would it be to have Edgar and Junior going in together? There is no reason to keep Edgar out of the Hall of Fame. The purists say he's a designated hitter. Well, guess what? It's not his fault that there's a DH in the American League. It's not his fault that he set records and hit over 300 a bazillion times for the Seattle Mariners, setting records even when they were poor playing as a team and having bad records left and right. The one constant was Griffey and Edgar. That would be two constants. But, you know, he's winning Silver Slugger Awards, which are given to the best hitter in the league. He's just a consummate, and he's their hitting coach now coming back here in the 2016 year as he was brought back with the new regime. So it's ridiculous that he's not in the Hall. To punish a guy for being in a position that is there in baseball, and you're going to say that it's not fair because he's a DH. He started his career as a third baseman.
Yeah, and he was a great third baseman at that. And, of course, the American League having the DH, which is, you know, somewhat similar to in the NFL, a fullback. You know, fullbacks hardly ever get the nod of being in the Hall of Fame. But, you know, when you're talking about great players in the DH, you have to mention Edgar Martinez. He's the one that actually revolutionized that position. And when Griffey left, Rodriguez left, Randy Johnson left, there was one left standing, and that was Edgar Martinez. That was the pillar of the Seattle Mariners. And, of course, you know, I believe that it will be his time to shine when he gets that call for the Hall of Fame bid.
Well, it's only a question of if it happens, because he hasn't even come close to the necessary, I believe it's 75% of the votes to get into the Hall of Fame. So we'll see. I mean, maybe fate works properly and he and Griffey get in together, but that will be seen as the votes come in. And goodness, Sean, you know, it is Monday. We battle Monday Night Football with our live show. And the Bengals just might be in trouble?
Yeah, man, it looks like the Houston Texans are having a good game. And, you know, they're up 10-6 right now. But there's still a lot of football left. So, you know, we'll see what happens there. Of course, when we go off the air, we'll be watching it with bated breath to see if the Cincinnati Bengals can remain undefeated. As I mentioned earlier, two other teams undefeated in this league, in the New England Patriots and the Carolina Panthers. So there's a lot of implications as far as who's going to remain undefeated, and this is definitely a great game. But what's on tap this week, Sean Wally, for the Double S Express? Where are you at this weekend?
I was getting ready to ask you the same, because I know the 49ers are in Seattle, so you're not going to work a 49er game. Maybe there's a Raider game. I know your son gets to work a lot of college games. Sean Wally was going to work an SWX football game, but that's been kiboshed thanks to the Yakima chapter of the WIAA wanting too much money. So poo-poo on you. So really, you know, I'm available if anybody wants a voiceover, an announcer, a camera operator. Hey, a play-by-play person, I'm your guy.
Hey, there you go. So it has been thrown out there that Sean Wally is available for what ails you as far as anything production-wise. Sean Wally, that is just amazing that you ripped off probably about six occupations there. And, you know, whoever's out there that has a job available, please, please give it to the stud, Mr. Sean Wally, ladies and gentlemen. Sean Wally, man, I tell you, it doesn't get any better than that, man. It doesn't get any better than that.
The bait is on the hook, and I have cast it out into the water.
Yes, definitely, man. And so, you know, for me as well, it's going to be a down weekend. And so, man, you know, I think it's a good week that we get to rest.
So rest, relax, recuperate, spend good time with the family and the significant others.
Yeah, well, you know, hey, that's always fun. So those are happy times for us, definitely. You know, so, you know, this is the weekend where we definitely get to relax and be happy, Sean Wally. Boy,
well,
I tell you.
Well, that's definitely what Raider Nation and the 12s need is some reason to be happy, because that was not yesterday or today.
Man, you're definitely right, man. And so, you know, It has to get better for our teams, and gosh, I can't keep going through weeks like this to where the both of us come in and we're sad because our NFL teams are not pulling weight, so it's got to get better.
So I have to let you have the floor. I know you've touted those Redbirds from Arizona for a while now. Sorry, I've got to clear my throat. I got a little lump, like,
Yeah.
Maybe it's an allergic reaction to Carson Palmer and those Cardinals.
Hey, it's some of that crow coming out.
But hey, hey, no, I have never said they're not a good team. My issue is, man, I'm trying to weigh my affinity and membership and a card-carrying 12 against my unbiased broadcaster voice. And seriously, you're down 19-0. The Cardinals are up 19-0, running away with the game, and you annihilate them in the third quarter, come back and take the lead in the fourth quarter. I understand they lost the game, being Seattle, but for these people that are jumping off bridges, saying they're done, it's over, no. If it was done and over, it would have been 46-0.
Right.
A team's down 19-0. Come back, take the lead, have the momentum. And as Pete Carroll said, we had them. Yes, you did. So as a distant observer, Sean Boyd, as a non-card-carrying 12 member, what is the issue in Seattle? And, I mean, really, they're minuscule. They're close to either being a bad team or a great team.
Oh, man. It's simple. It's the defense. And so when you look at the five losses that Seattle has this year, they have been weighted on the defense. So all five losses.
They've had the lead in the fourth quarter in every game.
In every game that they've lost, yes. And so you have to take a look at the defense. It's that simple. And so what has been the anchor for the team for so long, and of course, you know, that name goes without saying, the Legion of Boom, they're that for a reason. When they're not functioning on all cylinders, then things happen in a negative sense for Seattle. The defense isn't closing out the games like they should. They're not getting the three and outs and getting off the field, and they're allowing teams to score. And once that happens, they put the onus on Russell Wilson and the offense, and the offense is still trying to find themselves. Now, I hear a lot of crazy stuff, Sean Wally, about, you know, Russell Wilson, and you know, I have to take his defense here. I hear a lot of crazy stuff about Russell Wilson and the whole Sierra thing, and you know how she's taking all of his time and all that stuff. No, it's not that. You know, it. Russell Wilson's still doing the things that Russell Wilson does. I mean, he eludes the pocket or the blitz and the rush in the pocket and will find yards here and there. He has tremendous touch as far as finding the open receiver. But what has been the Achilles heel for Seattle all year long has been the offensive line and how they have not gelled or come together. They've shown signs of greatness from time to time, but they have not come together as a unit, and that's key. And, you know, say whatever you want about Bevel and, you know, and his prowess and, you know, hey, guys, get over it on the last play of the Super Bowl, okay? You know, this is something that, you know, it happens to the best of teams, but, you know, what I see as far as the Seahawks' problem is concerned is that defense getting off the field and the offensive woes that will continue until that offensive line matures and buys some time for Russell Wilson.
So, Sean, is it Russell's fault that Jimmy Graham had that touchdown catch and dropped it last second?
No. You know, it's you know, that's not his fault. You know, and, you know, as a team, you have to take this loss as a whole. Now, you know, some could say that some of these acquisitions that we thought would be great acquisitions can wind up biting you in the end, and this is one case, just one play in one game of a regular season. But, you know, last year and the past couple of years, it's been a team concept. The continuity of Seattle has been flawless. And, you know, now it seems to be shaken a little bit with some of these offseason moves. But, you know, there's still time. There's still time for Seattle to get things together. The unfortunate part is that, like, as I mentioned last week, home field advantage is no more for Seattle. So let's X that out. And that is a big deal. I believe that Seattle came back mainly because, man, that crowd was awesome. 12s, you guys came out and did your thing once again. And I don't care what anybody says, the 12s make a difference. And when you take Seattle away from that venue, then it becomes a little even more shaky. 12s, you rocked it last night in bringing your team back to where they took the lead in the third quarter and then just couldn't hold it. And so, you know, there's some work to be done for Seattle.
The defense for the Seahawks was on the field for 40 minutes. You can't ask any defense to stay out there for 40 minutes and stop an offense with the likes of Larry Fitzgerald, Floyd, John Brown, you name it, Andre Ellington, Chris Johnson, Carson Palmer having all day. The only time he didn't have all day is when Seattle brought five or six. When they brought the blitz, Carson Palmer had issues. So why not blitz more? That's a question. Another big question. Marshawn Lynch, 42 yards, but on 8 carries. Do the math. That's a very nice average. Why only 8 carries for Beast Mode?
Well, you know, Rawls did a very good job as well. So there was a balanced attack in the rushing. We can't say that rushing was a bad thing. I just think that when you have 3 and outs on offense, that becomes a huge problem. You know, I have a question. So when we're talking about Russell Wilson and some of the fans are talking about the downward play of Russell, which I still think that he's just being Russell Wilson. This is the same quarterback as of the past few years. What about Richard Sherman? I mean, do you see maybe a decline in some of his play? Because, you know, there has to be a certain kind of edge. You know, where's that edge, that bravado, that braggadocious attitude that we've known and loved from Richard Sherman? It looks to me that he's been really quiet. He's just been out there playing football, and he's kind of exposed a little bit on a couple of occasions. And so, you know, if I were to point out a person, you know, I'd take a look at Richard Sherman and what's going on there.
Well, Sherman is almost Jekyll and Hyde yesterday versus 2 weeks ago before the bye at Dallas. If you remember that game at Dallas, he shut Dez Bryant down. Dez Bryant, one of the best receivers in the game. Yet last night, Sunday Night Football, the entire world's watching. He couldn't stop. Not very well. Okay, there were a couple plays, like the ball he tipped, almost intercepted, but was still caught by the Cardinal off the tip. Ridiculous play. But Sherman was there, just didn't work out. But the majority, it's like that touchdown in the corner to Brown. I'm sorry, Floyd. What in the world? If you see Sherman about the 2-yard line, he darts towards the quarterback. Why?
Yeah,
give it extra space to the receiver for the quarterback, Palmer, to drop that dime in.
Yeah, it looked like a blown coverage. And then once the ball was released by Palmer, he realized he made that mistake. And, you know, really this game was ripe for the picking for Seattle. One of the things that I talked highly about as far as the Arizona Cardinals are concerned is that they're a great team. They, you know, when I say they mirror teams, the mirror Seattle, they mirror them a lot. Very quick on defense. They have they show a lot of schemes and flying around to the ball. You know, but here's one of the things that will always rear its head as far as Arizona is concerned, and that's Carson Palmer. As great as he is, he's also a mistake-prone type of quarterback. He's been that way ever since Cincinnati and the journeyman through Oakland and now Seattle. Carson will give up the ball, whether it's with an interception or a fumble, and Seattle had great momentum when they put the pressure, as you were saying, and were getting the ball out of Palmer's hands and stealing it, you know, from him because, you know, he wasn't controlling it in the pocket. And all of a sudden, Seattle went away from it. And yeah, it baffles me why defensive coordinators don't continue to dial it up, because they had Arizona right where they wanted them.
Now, Sean, I give you the fact that Arizona is ahead by 3 games in the division from Seattle and also the St. Louis Rams, who inexplicably got obliterated by the Bears. Seattle and St. Louis both 4-5. The remaining schedule for the Seattle Seahawks: home for the 49ers on Sunday, Thanksgiving weekend home for Ben Roethlisberger and the Pittsburgh Steelers. I will be working that for CBS Sports. The 2 road games to start December: at Minnesota, the 1-7-2 team right now, playing very well. December 13th at Baltimore should be an easy victory. Seattle at home hosting Cleveland December 20th. Right after Christmas, December 27th, hosting the NFC West hated St. Louis Rams. And the final game after the new year, January 3rd at Arizona, may or may not decide the NFC West. It could be decided before then if Arizona continues to win and Seattle stumbles. But not a daunting task, not a tough, horrible schedule. Your thoughts?
Man, I see it the other way. I see it as a tough task in the next 3 games. For one, you know, with San Francisco going up to Seattle, let's face it, I just think that Seattle should annihilate San Francisco. But, you know, anything can happen on any given Sunday. It's the next 2 weeks that are a huge question mark and will test the fortitude of Seattle and whether they are going to be able to make the postseason. That is Pittsburgh and Minnesota. Of course, earlier in the show, we talked about Minnesota and how they snuck up on the NFL, sitting at 7-2. They are a real good football team, and they are a mirror of the Seattle Seahawks as far as what they do defensively now and what Seattle used to do defensively and the way their offense is run. When you're looking at, you know, the likes of Adrian Peterson as a strong running back as well. And so you're looking at that Minnesota game and then Pittsburgh with Ben Roethlisberger and, you know, their offense. You can never count them out. So these next 3 weeks are going to be tough weeks for the Seattle Seahawks. And then, as you had mentioned, late in the season, when they have to play their divisional rivals, you know, you've got Arizona at home. And if Arizona can stay healthy, you know, I think that they're really going to put the clamps down and show that up in Seattle was not a fluke, and that they will, you know, put the pedal to the metal and close things out there. But, you know, again, they have to stay healthy and, you know, make sure that they clamp the door shut. So it's tough. This is going to be a tough go for the remaining games for Seattle.
Well, Sean, let's look at strength of schedule only. We went over who Seattle has left. Here is the Cardinals' remaining schedule. Sunday night, again, 2 in a row on Sunday night, kind of odd, they host the Cincinnati Bengals. The Arizona Cardinals then have 2 in a row on the road in the NFC West at San Francisco. I'm guessing you might be there in Santa Clara.
Yep.
The weekend of Thanksgiving, November 29th.
Yep.
They kick off December in St. Louis always a tough matchup against St. Louis, especially in that dome. Then December 10th, which must be, yes, a Thursday night contest just 4 days later against the Minnesota Vikings.
Yes, and you know, so Minnesota is that spoiler in this whole deal for, you know, for both Seattle and Arizona. Now, when you mentioned St. Louis, now a couple of weeks ago we were talking about St. Louis as one of those teams that will, you know, make things tough for the other teams in the NFC West. Now, we just found out that Nick Foles has been benched in St. Louis for a lack of play. Johnny Hecker coming in to take over the reins for the St. Louis Cardinals. That's not good. So let's just say that that's a win for Arizona if Johnny Hecker comes in. And, you know, of course they have Todd Gurley, but, you know, you have to have a solid quarterback. And so there's some shakiness going on in St. Louis. But that the Minnesota game and the San Francisco game are games that are both games that Seattle and Arizona have to play. So I would say two out of three have to be won by either team in order for them to be, you know, respected and moving forward, for Arizona to actually close out the NFC West and for Seattle to get themselves back in it for a wild card spot.
Well, Sean, here's the final four games for the Cardinals. We already talked about the Minnesota matchup December 10th. Then they travel across the country to Philadelphia. Then they're home for two, hosting Green Bay and Seattle. So the final four, Minnesota, Philadelphia, Green Bay, and Seattle. Not going to be an easy road for the Cardinals. But if they hold serve and beat those teams, they definitely earn the division title.
Well, the Green Bay game will not be an easy game. And, of course, depending on how the season is going for Seattle and Arizona, that should be a game that, you know, could either be a close game or it can be a blowout. The Philadelphia game, I mean, right now, you know, Sam Bradford is out, you know, as the quarterback there. So you have a lot of quarterback changes going on, you know, and of course that being one in Philly as well. So, you know, unless things can get better for St. Louis and Philly, this seems to be a better schedule for Arizona than it does Seattle. But again, you know, Seattle has been known to pull things out. You know, and, you know, last year at this time, they were sitting at 6-4, the Seattle Seahawks, and they ran the table to get themselves into the Super Bowl. It's a little bit different now when you're a sub-500 and, you know, you have a couple of losses at home. It makes it, a little different. So, you know, I believe that, you know, lightning striking twice in the same spot is very rare. And what I mean by that is Arizona and the injuries that happened to where they just collapsed at the end. I don't think that's going to happen this year. I don't believe that that's going to happen. I think that Arizona is going to make sure that that doesn't happen. So I see Arizona winning the NFC West, and it's going to be up to Seattle to try to find some other way mathematically to get themselves into the playoffs.
Well, strength of schedule-wise, based on current record, the easiest schedule is on the Seattle Seahawks. That being said, who knows what happens between now and the end of the NFL season in terms of injuries, suspensions, who's hot, who's not, who has the lucky rabbit's foot, a la the New England Patriots. So we'll see. But strength of schedule-wise, Seattle has the easier road, which they need, being down three games in the division.
The biggest thing the Seattle Seahawks can do for themselves is to take each week one game at a time, and understand that head-to-head wise, they are, you know, the better team when they line up. When their squad is the defending NFC Championship squad, they have to make sure that they put that fear into the other team. And so week after week, one game at a time, we'll see what Seattle can do. And then hopefully by week 16 in that Arizona game, you know, Seattle can – we'll see where they're at. I just feel like whatever they do from here on out, they're playing for a wild card spot.
Hey, as long as they get in, that's better than not.
Yeah, of course, you know, and who knows? You know, as we had talked earlier, you know, Seattle making it in at 7-9 in 2008. You know, who saw that happen? And, of course, that was the infamous coming out party of Beast Mode. And so, you know, they just have to make it in is the key. You're exactly right. And so we'll see. There's a lot of football left. There's 7 games left, and Seattle can definitely turn it around.
So, Sean, I know you said you had nothing going this weekend. Does that mean there's no NFHS Network football playoff-wise, or are they a little slow on the draw?
Well, you know, we're going to be doing, you know, just like Jessica was mentioning, we're going to be doing the quarterfinals, semifinals, and championship games. And so these are the first rounds of the playoffs. So this weekend, you know, we're waiting it out a little bit. And then when the following weekend is when we get things rolling going into the Thanksgiving weekend. So, you know, I'm looking forward to doing a couple of games here. And, you know, high school football is exciting. And so, you know, yeah, it should be a lot of fun for us.
And Sean, before we end our show, which has gone way over its time slot, hopefully Dawn is still awake at the BBS studios in Paradise, California, but we definitely have to get out a heartfelt condolence to everybody impacted by the terrorist bombings in Paris. And it's just ridiculous. I mean, why? What is the purpose? It doesn't matter whether you believe in trees, dirt, oceans, bugbears, aliens, who cares? You eat glue. It doesn't matter. You're still a person on this earth. There's no reason to harm anybody else just because they think different than you or look different than you. Give me a break. ISIS needs to go. I don't care how it's done. Just find a way to get rid of them. And don't worry about Starbucks cups and whether or not they're red or painted or Christmas trees or not. Please, there are bigger issues in this world, like what Paris is dealing with right now.
Yeah, you know, and I'm glad that we're actually taking the time out to offer the condolences to our, you know, our allied countries and actually countries all around. And you know, if I may have the platform for just a minute, Sean, I see a lot on Facebook and how everybody is rallying and they're, you know, changing their Facebook pages to Paris's flag, which I have been one to do. I have done that as well to show solidarity. You know, we as a media do a disservice when are bad things that happen to good people all around, and Paris is one of them. Of course, Lebanon had bombings over the past couple of days, and there wasn't as much brought out into the media. And Libya has also, you know, had terrorist attacks. In Kenya as well, 143 people were put to death from ISIL in Kenya. And, you know, nobody's changing their Facebook flags or Facebook pages to those countries. And I think it's a shame that we as the media do not bring a focus to everyone that this happens to. And my heartfelt condolences to all of these countries and all of these places that are going through these struggles. And, you know, like you were saying, Sean, just the idiotic behavior of a small group of people that feel like, you know, they have to show hatred towards, you know, another person is just a travesty. And so, you know, here at the Double S Express, we do issue out our heartfelt condolences to all the countries and all the people that have dealt with some type of terrorism in any way, shape, or form. There's no place for it. And, you know, we just ask for peace in these troubling times.
And as Thanksgiving approaches, maybe people will now be more thankful for what they have and think about how things would be if they didn't have their beloved tablet, their beloved Wi-Fi. I mean, you know, simple things that people take for granted, and everything can be gone in an instant. There were, you know, hundreds, if not 1,000+ people in that concert hall in Paris, and now there are hundreds that will no longer see their families.
Yeah, you know, and you know, unfortunately, it's at a time to where we're going to hear a lot of rhetoric over the next, oh my gosh, over the next 6 months to a year as far as who can actually do a better job in office on this. And please don't get me started on this. But yeah, I just think that whoever leads this great country has a strong understanding on what it takes to actually lead it, to actually show a strength that on what the United States has, and a peace and solidarity as well. And so, you know, it's just a sad, sad time. But as you're saying, with the holiday seasons approaching, you know, with your loved ones, make sure that you hug them a little bit tighter. Make sure that you kiss them a little bit longer, and just tell them some nice things as far as, you know, how you feel about them. Because, you know, again, in this day and age, it could be a last time. So, you know, again, to these countries that have had travesties, our heartfelt condolences here at DSX. And, you know, we just wish Godspeed to everybody.
And Sean, one thing to pass along to your wife, Denise, and maybe she's listening and she'll hear it. You won't have to pass it on, but heck, pass it on anyway as a double whammy. I'm going to send Max, your dog, a coat for the winter, because I know his hair is gone. And, it, you know, if it was summertime, that would be great. That would be the time to get rid of his fur and all of his hair, but not heading into winter. I mean, I know you're in Northern California. You don't get snow. You don't get 30s or 40s. But holy moly, that dog's going to hate you guys for a long time. He looks miserable.
You know, I sent him outside, and, you know, normally he goes outside to play for, you know, eons.
And runs.
And, man, he went outside for a couple of minutes and turned right back around. And, you know, he doesn't look like, you know, the Yorkie poodle more than he looks like, gosh, what's a Chihuahua? All his hair is gone, man. I come home and I'm like, what in the world is going on? Whose dog is this? And what'd you do with Max? And he's looking like the same thing, but yeah, man, he's going to need a coat.
You know, I think Dr. Evil wants to take him for his dog in the next movie.
Oh my gosh, man. Yeah, he looks at me and he's just like, oh boy. He's got something for me. I can tell you that.
Here's a little anecdote of help for you and Mrs. Boyd. The next time, you know, when he goes back in 2 months, get the puppy cut. That will leave a little bit of coat of fur for him, so he won't be freezing and look distraught.
Well, here's the thing that you missed. So when you were down here last, of course, he had a nice coat. But since the rains and everything came, gosh, man, we've been some bad owners, I swear, man. And so his hair got natted up and everything. So when Denise took him in, they were like, there's no way that we can groom that. We have to just shave him all the way down. That's the reason why he was shaved down.
It wasn't start over.
Yeah, have this start over, man. So that was bad on our part. I take it. I take full responsibility. Please, PETA, do not send me bad emails. I do not need that right now. But, you know, yeah, we're going to get better on that one. So that was our fault.
Wow. Well, Max, hopefully we'll get you a sweater for Christmas and you'll stay warm through the holiday season there at the Boyd house. And it's been a great show tonight here on The Double, going extra long thanks to Don Newsom. Hopefully he's still awake in Paradise, California at the BBS Radio Studios. Special thank you to our big-time guest tonight, Nick Ferguson, a huge friend of the show, former NFL defensive back, now doing great things on his own in broadcasting at voiceamerica.com. And Jessica Benson, the sports director at NBCRightNow.com, KNDU-TV in Kennewick, Washington, doing great things here in Eastern Washington. Sean, it's been fun.
Yes, and if you want to catch our shows in the archives, you can go to bbsradio.com/DSX, or you can go to www.double-s-express.com, and man, you can catch our other shows, our archived shows, of course, and then of course here at BBS Radio, I'm sorry, here at DSX.
Do you need some help, Sean?
As
Can
we
I
are,
assist?
Yeah, man, yeah, you know, it's always sentimental with, you know, at this part of the show, man, because you never want it to end. But as we
what
always,
about, what about taking the shot? I mean, yeah, are we hitting net or?
That's what I'm getting to, man.
Hey,
as a matter of fact,
one question for you. We know the Seahawks and Niners play on Sunday. What about your Raiders? They play?
Man, the Raiders are taking on the Detroit Lions in Detroit. So, Detroit just beat Green Bay, so that's not a laydown. So, but, you know, you never know. And people have favored Derek Carr to Aaron Rodgers, so I think that maybe the Lions have the antidote for that as well. So it could be a tough game. So who knows, man? Who knows? But as far as what you were saying about, you know,
Tell the Raiders to take a maple bar to Golden Tate.
So hey, man, Golden Tate had a great end of the game as well, by the way. But we're looking forward to going to Detroit and beating the Lions. How about that?
Sounds good to me. Anything that helps the NFC and the Seahawks, let's do it.
That's right. We're willing to do our part. And as you're saying with those
Anything that makes the Raider Nation happy, let's do it.
Yeah, you know, I'm all for that. And that's a whole nother show as well, talking about what makes us happy in the Raider Nation. So, you know, we got a whole bunch of stadium issues, owner issues, and just trying to win some ball games and remain relevant. So a lot of fun here in Northern California. I think I'm back on track, Sean Wally, as you were mentioning about the shots, even though I might have taken one or two.
You got a drum roll on that special app of yours?
Man, you know, I might have a drum roll. We have the special effects in full effect here. And so, you know,
about the weather if you need to take time to gather yourself and find that drum roll and, you know, say that, hey, college basketball season's here. The Huskies won in China. The Cougars won in Pullman. All is well in college basketball. Wait a minute. Speaking of Cougars, the Cougars beat UCLA in UCLA and have 7 wins, folks. 7 victories for the Cougs in Pullman.
Well, I guess they uncooged it. So, yeah, they did have a great win against UCLA. So hats off to the Cougs and the Palouse. And, of course, I know how to handle mine here at the switchboards. And so, as you had mentioned, Sean Wally, the drum roll. And as we always say here on the DSX, you're not in the game unless you take a shot. And when you take that shot, we hope it is nothing but the bottom of the net. This has been a DSX LLC production for Don Newsom in Paradise, California at the BBS Radio Studios. Sean Wally up in the Pacific Northwest.
That's me.
And yours truly down here in the EG Studios in Elk Grove, California. You have been listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. Hey-o! We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. Join us next Monday for some more great sports talk and big-time guests. On the Double with the Double S Express.